Hi everybody, my name's Julie, I'm an alcoholic. Warm... I was not expecting that, thank you. A nice warm Accupaw welcome at the Spring Fling. No. Happy Valentine's Day. I had to leave my husband this morning in the depths of winter. If any of you have ever been to the Midwest, you understand what I'm talking about when I say wind chill. 15 below zero, icy pavement and inches of snow. Luckily, I got to take the plane this morning and the storm rolled in this afternoon, so I'm here by myself on Valentine's Day, so y'all have to make me feel special because my husband's not here to do that. So, but I'm really, really happy to be in warm California weather and here with you at this conference, which I have attended before. I've lived in California. I've only lived in Iowa now for a couple of years, and I have a lot of really, really wonderful memories of attending Spring Things in the past. And so I want to thank the committee who continues to put this conference on. I want to thank Clem and Cindy for a gracious welcome here. And so anyway, I was really glad to be here. I am a drunk. I used to love to drink. Drinking was a very, very important part of my life. And I believe that drinking saved my life. And I don't know if I can explain that well. But I will tell you that when I was a child growing up, I needed something. I needed something bad. And I was one of those kids who was like really uncomfortable in my own skin right from the gate. I just had a hard time with you. I had a hard time with people. I had a hard time interacting. I was a really, really fat, ugly kid, and I got picked on. I got teased a lot. I used to go home and cry myself to sleep. And I was contemplating suicide very, very early on. So when I first started to drink, it was like, it wasn't a party for me. It was like a big, huge sigh of relief. And when I started drinking, you might notice that I'm still a little bit young. I drank early on, and I got sober early on. But drinking for the years that I drank really took its toll and took its toll fast. My story is, I had a couple of very, very dramatic years of drinking. I had a few really good years where where drinking made me feel euphoric, where it made me feel like I could relax, where it made me feel like I could be with other people. But I was, you know, it was like 12, 13 years old. I wasn't like saddling up to the bar and ordering a drink with the, you know, at the local tavern. I had to lie and I had to steal and I had to, you know, I had to rob my parents. I had to take liquor from them, from their liquor cabinets. I had to use school as my drinking and my, the place where I got to drink and use drugs. And so needless to say, my burgeoning alcoholism wasn't really conducive with my education. So very, very early on, I started to compromise the things that I was grown up, what I was brought up to believe were important and good. I compromised my family. I compromised my relationships with my friends. I stopped going to school. I stopped being a social person. My parents, being the nice, I almost said normal. Don't send them this tape. I have some wonderful, wonderful parents, and they didn't know what to do with me. They were at a loss for what to do with me. I mean, I was a walking wound, and when I started drinking, I wore my drunkenness like a coat of armor. They found the program of Al-Anon very, very early on in my drinking career and tried to detach, but didn't detach very well. They still had a vested interest in having me stay sober and having a sober home. So they went a step beyond Al-Anon and bought a book called Tough Love. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this book called Tough Love, but I hate this book. This is a horrible book for any alcoholic, for any juvenile delinquent. Run like hell when you see your parents pick it up. my parents practiced a diligent tough love program. We love you, get out of our house. Basically is what they told me. It wasn't quite that dramatic, but they did set up a series of ultimatums. Act this way or these are your consequences. Start going to school or blah blah blah. I mean it was they were very adamant in their request, and I don't blame them. But you know, I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. They were asking me to stop drinking, and for me, stopping drinking meant stop living in the world. I didn't know how to show up, and I didn't know how to be with other people. I wanted to be good, and I wanted my parents to love me and appreciate me and care about me. I mean, I couldn't verbalize that at the time, but, you know, I didn't want to be, like, a total social reject, but I didn't know how to live without alcohol. And so, you know, I mean, I would promise to be good and make those promises that we all do, that this time it's going to be different, and this, you know, like, today's the day when I'm just going to muster it up, and I'm going to do the things that I say I'm going to do. And the second I would have a drop of alcohol in my system, then the craving was on, and I couldn't stop. And my parents very, very quickly decided that they needed to not be my parents anymore, and they drove me down to the courthouse in Rochester, New York, where we were living at the time, and signed me over to the state of New York. And I spent the next several years bouncing in and out of detention centers and foster homes. I was evaluated by the courts of New York. They wanted to figure out what to do with me. And I went through a series of treatment centers. The first time I was evaluated for alcoholism, I think I was 13 years old, and they told me that I was in fact too young to be an alcoholic, which I wholeheartedly agreed with. Thank you very much. But they did think that I needed a little bit of education in my alcohol use, so they sent me to a program where I had to watch films about, you know, like what happens to you, like Jane the teenage alcoholic, you know, those after school special kind of movies. So we would show up, we would get loaded in the bathroom on the break and watch these horrible movies, and we were actually required to go to one meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous just to see what could happen if we went down that road. So I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and introduced myself as an alcohol abuser, thank you, and thought that this whole thing was nice for you guys, but, you know, I certainly could still stop when I wanted to. I completed this program successfully because all I had to do was show up, essentially, and I was allowed to return home. And when I returned home, it was another one of the first in a long series of experiences of me coming home with a fresh, clean slate. Here's your room, here's your course schedule at school, go for it. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Every time I showed up to school or called a friend, I was loaded. And as soon as I was drinking, I was off. I was off and running. So, you know, I was on probation and I would get picked up a lot. I would be gone for days at a time. You know, I started to, like, drinking stopped becoming a comfort. It started to become a necessity, and then it moved from a necessity to something that actually made me, like, turn more and more of that self-loathing in on myself. And I was very suicidal. I had started cutting my arms up. I mean, I was running around on the streets a lot, and I was horrified when I had those very brief glimpses of what was happening to me. I mean, I grew up in a nice little suburb, and the way I was living wasn't the way we lived, if you know what I mean. Like, this doesn't happen to people like us. And I got a couple of glimpses of how much pain I was inflicting in my family's life. There's one memory that I have that I'll share. I had a fight with my father, which I often did, which was often violent, so that I could leave the house. So we had, like, pushed each other around, and I think I hit my sister and kicked the dog on the way out or something. And as I was walking down the street, I realized that I had forgotten something, and like a pack of cigarettes or something, something important enough to make me turn around and go back home. And my parents, you have to understand, had put on this tough love front. They had been very united in their resolve against me, is how I felt. And I knew that they were probably home, like, relieved to have me gone, celebrating that their house was peaceful once again. And I walked up the steps to walk inside the house, and I couldn't go in because I saw in this window that looked right into the kitchen, my mother sitting at the kitchen table with her head in her hands, sobbing her heart out like I had never seen before. And I knew that I had done that, that that was me, that those tears were about me. And I didn't get very many glimpses of what my alcoholism was doing, but that was one little window into the kind of destructive drinking I was doing. I mean, I just thought I was hating myself and I was hating my life, and drinking was the only thing I could do. I had no concept that it was affecting anybody else. I didn't stop drinking. The disease of alcoholism is very, very strong, and any normal person who has that kind of realization, even for 5 minutes, would say, okay, something's got to stop. And that's the difference between a problem drinker and an alcoholic. I couldn't muster up the willpower to overcome that moment. I turned right around and went off and was drinking for several more years after that. My consequences for drinking got more and more intense, and my consequences, I guess I should say, are the treatment centers I went to got longer and more intense. I went to an outpatient program where we were required to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. During this treatment center, they considered us alcoholics. I didn't consider myself an alcoholic, but they considered me an alcoholic, so they wanted me to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we had to go to at least two or maybe three a week. We didn't have court cards to sign, but we had to write reports on the meetings that we went to. So we used to go to these meetings and, like, sit in the back, and I think there was, like, what the topic was and, like, a general theme of the meeting and how we felt when we were at the meeting. And so we were, like, doing these academic reports on AA, which is the most preposterous thing I could imagine. But, you know, I went to the meetings, and I handed in my little reports, and I did my little group thing, and I was doing steps that they were, you know, they were signing steps, and so I'm thinking, okay, I'm hanging out in AA and all is well, and I graduate from treatment and think, okay, whatever, and I drink again. I mean, it's like I had no concept that, you know, it was time to stop drinking. It wasn't time for me to stop. So things are getting worse and worse and worse, and to make a long story short, things just got very, very bleak to the point where I didn't get picked up off my office this last time. Before my final treatment center, I actually turned myself in. I had been on the streets for quite some time and hadn't eaten in a while, and needed to see some friendly faces. And friendly faces at that point were, you know, like the detention center folks who had a warm bed for me. So I turned myself in, and I was actually flown from New York to Minnesota. And this was back in 1985, and I went to a treatment center that was specifically designed for chronic relapsing juvenile delinquents like myself. We were a fine group of kids. We had been to treatment before. We knew how to cry on command. We knew how to sit in a group and talk about our feelings and our issues. And we knew how to handle the family week. And, you know, we knew how to work this treatment center thing. They had a very hot seat model, I guess, if you want to, you know, do following treatment center paradigms. I was on the hot seat quite a bit. But the most noteworthy thing about this treatment center, and the reason why I like to talk about it, is that I was reintroduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't called H&I in Minnesota, but we had people come in from the outside and bring meetings to us, and we looked forward to that. But more than that, we looked forward to going out to our one AA meeting every single week. And at this point in my life, my parents had changed their locks on the house so that I could no longer come home. I was no longer welcome in my school. The only place I could really sleep was a treatment center or a detention center. So when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous this time around, and I saw people who looked like you people, like happy, clean, like you've showered recently, and you said, welcome, have a seat, there was a level of attraction there. Now, I didn't think that I was an alcoholic, but my God, you were so nice. I didn't really trust it at first, but I certainly was attracted to it. And I believe that I was attracted to the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous long before I was attracted to the steps, because, you know, I mean, we were like one of those treatment center vans of juvenile delinquents that drive around ruining AA meetings. I mean, we're a bunch of kids with, like, ripped up clothes who wanted to sit in the back and eat all your cookies and drink your coffee and, like, didn't want to hear about your sobriety, but, you know, we wanted to be around you on some level. So, you know, But nobody kicked us out. Nobody changed the meeting location and didn't tell us about it. So for 5 months, we went back week after week, and I didn't necessarily become an alcoholic through that process, but I tell you, the kindness of the people in those meetings planted a seed so that when that moment came when I knew in my heart of hearts that I was an alcoholic, I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous was a place that would take me in. I knew it was a place that I could get sober, and I knew it was a place where people were kind and had all their teeth. Well, most of us do anyway. I did work some steps in the treatment center. They gave us pamphlets on how to work the steps, so I did them to the best of my ability. I did a really wonderful fourth step. I didn't do my fourth step, but it was a really good fourth step. I wrote a lot of stuff that somebody did. It wasn't me. And they shipped a priest in for me to read it to. And he did report that I had done a fabulous fifth step, that I bared my soul. And then I was handed a pamphlet called Step 6 and 7, The Forgotten Steps, and I was sent home. So, okay, Forgotten Steps, I'm going home. I was given a big book, I was told to get a sponsor, and I believed myself like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, okay, so here I am, I'm home again, I've been sober, this is a 5 month period of time. I'm home from treatment and I think, okay, my life is going to AA meetings and like bowling on the weekends and, you know, how boring can it get? I asked a woman to sponsor me and never called her. I never completed any more steps. I tried to read the big book only in intense moments of insomnia. I would open up to Bill's story and war fever ran high. Could not relate. Put me right to sleep. But it's so important for me to talk about this period of my life because I did truly believe myself a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Clearly, half measuring was like a compliment to what I was doing. There was no half, maybe a quarter measuring at this point. Just showing up in meetings and hanging out in the back and eating lots of pie at Perkins after the meeting. And not feeling better inside. Not feeling a whole lot better inside. And, you know, our literature tells us that half measures avail us nothing. And I always like to say that I'm really, really, really glad that's true. Because I was miserable. When you took alcohol away from me, I was still that miserable, lonely, just horribly fear-stricken person, and I had no outlet, I had no solution, and I was going to meetings, and I was trying to, fit in with you guys and, smile and be happy, because people were smiley and happy in AA, and I wasn't feeling it, and I wasn't there, and, and I thought that my life was going to be like this. I thought this was AA. And fortunately, I drank. And even more fortunately than that, I came back. A lot of people don't come back. I've seen a lot of people go out in this program during the time that I've been here and not come back. My final drunk was, it was interesting in that I hadn't planned it. I didn't want to drink. In fact, I think I might have even gone to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night. I went to the movies and ran into somebody that I used to know who I used to drink with, and she was drinking a wine cooler, and she handed it to me. I said, hey, what's up? Okay. And I'm drinking. And I had no thoughts of drinking. I wasn't, it was that moment that the big book talks about. There is going to come a time when there is nothing between me and alcohol. And I did not have a spiritual solution. I did not recoil as if from a hot flame. I picked it up, and I swallowed it. And as soon as I was swallowing it, I was in a dead panic. Thought, oh my gosh, I'm in AA. I'm not supposed to be drinking. My throat's burning, and I'm like, this 10 months that I've built up all this 10 months of sobriety, and I've white knuckled it, and I've gone bowling, and I've eaten pie at Perkins, and I've been to all those meetings, and oh, I didn't stand it. And then I thought, I have to go change my date and tell all these people that have been watching me bounce in and out of the program and in and out of the program. And then I thought, if I got to change my date, it is not going to be because of a sip of a wine cooler, if you know what I mean. So my last drunk was overcoming the sip of the wine cooler and not doing much better. I drank the way, you know, I was like off and running. There was no managed drinking. There was no social drinking. There was no illusion that I was going to try to control it and be normal. I just wanted to get, like, just hammered. And I could not get drunk. I don't know if anybody else has experienced this moment, but this moment where alcohol, not only does it not work in the sense that it doesn't make me feel all right, but, like, I put massive quantities in my body and could not get drunk. And it was the most lonely, miserable, perfect jumping off place that God could have concocted for me. And I knew in my heart of hearts that I was an alcoholic. And I knew exactly where to go. And that was on August 5th of 1987. And I have not had to pick up a drink since that day. Now, I was 16 years old when I had my moment of clarity, and I have been sober for 15 years now, so I'm almost at my half-life, my sober half-life. So my story actually gets a lot better when I get sober, because I've lived a lot of my life in sobriety. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous far longer than I drank. And I have grown up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came in, I had no idea how to live. I had no idea how to function in society. I had no idea how to work. I immediately dropped out of high school. I immediately tested my parents again. They let me back into their home, and I was sober. So I knew that because I was sober, I wouldn't have to work or go to school or, you know, do anything to, like, pay rent or anything like that. Because, you know, I was sober. Like, for real. No, but this time I mean it. I'm really sober this time. And my parents kicked me out of the house again. So I was, you know, 4 months sober and wasn't even old enough to sign a lease and had to go out in the world on my own. And had a friend who was also sober, and we got our first apartment, and we were young people in AA, and we were the first of our young people friends in AA to have an apartment. So we had lots of people coming over and hanging out at our sober pad. And I started to learn how to work. I started to learn how to be a functioning human being. And it's interesting that I have recently in Iowa read an inventory to my sponsor, Margaret. And I was telling some people at dinner tonight that the same friend that I lived with, my first roommate in sobriety, has been organizing a reunion for those of us who got sober back in the mid and late 80s, because, like, none of us are getting invited, like, to our high schools or anything. It's all like these horrible juvenile delinquents that nobody wants us to come back. Nobody wants to know what we're doing and what happened to them, except for the drunks. So they're organizing a reunion, and I saw this list of names of people who I got sober with very early on, and I've been, like, going through some stuff around it. I saw this list of names, and I wasn't looking at this list thinking, oh, wow, huh, I wonder how they're doing. I wonder if they're sober. I was looking at it and, like, cringing because of who I was in early sobriety. I'm here to tell you that I didn't get sober and get good. I got sober, and I was an insane, lunatic alcoholic, like, unleashed upon the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, happy Valentine's Day, because I could go on, that kind of talk as well from early sobriety. I won't do that from the podium, because, you know, I'll spare you those details. But suffice to say that, you know, I don't always know when I'm creating wreckage and where I need to clean stuff up. But God has amazing timing in giving me little jolts and little moments of awareness and moments of clarity when it's time to go deeper and when it's time to do a little bit more work. I mean, I've stood up at many podiums and spoken at conferences and talked about my early sobriety and not had a second thought to how I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether or not I was a sober, responsible member of AA. I mean, I've learned a whole lot about our 12 traditions by breaking almost every single one of them. But I was able to break them by being of service. You know, I got into service and I got into that level and that activity in AA, and, you know, and sometimes did all right, sometimes not so good. But lucky for me, the people that I got sober with loved me enough to tell me when I was doing stuff wrong, loved me enough to, like, keeping me coming back. And I managed to, like, stay sober through this tricky, uncomfortable, awkward, like, I'm sober and hormonal, and there are a lot of cute boys in AA. And there still are a lot of cute boys in AA. I mean, I haven't been married 7 times. I've only been married once, but, man, I've had a few AA boyfriends, and I highly recommend AA dating. It is so much fun. You get some of my most dramatic moments. I'm from you men in Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless you. All right, where am I in my story? Do an AA boyfriend talk. Well, there's Tom. You know. And when I met Tom, we moved to, I was early in sobriety, and Tom, because of my relationship with Tom, I ended up in San Francisco from Rochester, New York. We found ourselves in a snowstorm in Buffalo. And I don't know if you're different from the Midwest. Buffalo is what they have, what they call lake effect snow, which is very different from bitter, icy cold, below zero wind chill. So for those of you who have only been in this is wonderful, wonderful place, called California. Can you tell I miss it? So badly. So in a snowstorm, we decided that we were going to move, and we decided that San Francisco was the place to go. So I moved to San Francisco. And I had been sober in Rochester, New York for 4 years before I moved. I had been sponsored. I had worked all 12 steps. I had made restitution to people that I had stolen from. I had gone back to my school and made amends to some of the people that I harmed there. I went back to family members and had made amends for my horrible behavior with those children. I had become an active, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and had done service on a number of different levels. I had fallen head over heels deeply in love with this program. And count it as a blessing that I did so early on. I have always loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never lost my love and my passion for AA. It draws me here, it draws me back, and it keeps me coming back. And if there's any wish that I have for any newcomers who are here tonight, it's that you fall in love with AA even half as much as I fell in love with AA, because that has been a godsend. And by the way, who is new here? Will you raise your hand if you're in your first 30 days of sobriety? We can't ask you to stand up and introduce yourselves, but I want to welcome you, and the people around you will welcome you after the meeting. I remember my first AA conference when I was brand new, and being overwhelmed with how many alcoholics there were, and just feeling like, man, this is it. This is totally it. And I had that same feeling tonight when we said the Serenity Prayer, and that sound of a lot of alcoholics gathered saying the same prayer at the same time. It moves me to tears. I love this program. I love this program. So anyway, I was living in San Francisco, and, you know, and I was an active, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I moved, I didn't realize how hard it was to move from one place to another. I mean, I was like, I had this wonderful party, this big, huge send-off, everybody told me how special I was and how much I meant to them, and then I showed up in San Francisco, and, like, nobody knew right off the bat how special and important I was, and I found that quite problematic, to be perfectly honest. I would go to meetings and people would say, oh, Julie, we're so glad you're here. I mean, I had to, like, stick my hand out and meet people. And, you know, it was really difficult. And I didn't do it right off the bat. I didn't do it really wholeheartedly until Tom just up and left me and broke my little heart. And then I came crying back to AA in a way that only the brokenhearted can. But that began my life in Alcoholics Anonymous in San Francisco. And in San Francisco, I went back to school. I was working. I got a new sponsor. I started working the steps again. I started to feel, I mean, I was 20. I turned 21. I had my 21st birthday. I was like 5 years sober when I turned 21. And, you know, like didn't. When I got sober at 16, thought, how in the heck am I going to have a 21st birthday? How am I going to get married? When am I going to do a New Year's? Blah, 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 blah. You know, turned 21, had a ball, was just living the single life. And then I got involved in young people's conferences. And, man, there were so many boys there to meet. And I met one. And I found myself I was pregnant. Oh, my gosh. I had no idea that could happen. It was horrible. It was really horrible. Had not planned it. Did not expect that. You can relate, can't you? It's like, how did it happen? So I promptly went and had an abortion. And I don't know why I share that from the podium. I seem to share that recently, more often than I used to. But the abortion I had took me to a very, very deep, dark, sad place in my sobriety. Luckily, I was still active in the program. I was volunteering at a conference, and those of you who are active in this conference know how much work it is and how easy it is to forget what's going on when you have like registration flyers to pass out and all these people to call and all this stuff to coordinate. But I had this abortion without even thinking whether or not I wanted to have it. I just had a reaction. And the relationship was not all that good. And I went to a very, very dark place in sobriety. And this was this was the first time in sobriety where my faith was really and truly tested in a way. You know, I mean, I came to AA and I met God here. I met the God of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I loved God. And I loved the way my life was turning out, and I loved the adventures I was having, and it had not been challenged or tested. And when I went into this depression, through this grief that I didn't even know that it was grief. It was just because I had commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would show up for my commitments, and I would go home, and I would just cry. And I had to go to a deeper place with God. God had to get bigger. God had to be bigger than just keeping me sober and meeting. God had to be now big enough to handle this grief and these emotions and these feelings of not wanting to participate when I have to participate. And I found out very shortly afterwards, about 3 months afterwards, that I was pregnant again. I mean, you would think, right? But there's that like 3% with this method, and I'm like a lucky winner. I believe that God really wanted me to have a baby. I mean, I have no other explanation for it other than, you know, I probably should have just been a convent at the time. With the same person, found myself pregnant and didn't realize it until I was, you know, like, there was only a day left for me to make a decision on whether or not I wanted to keep it. But as soon as I found out, I knew that I had to have this baby, and I became a single parent in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, so Dad tried to hang out for a little bit, and you know, he gave his, like, it actually was a pretty ugly ending. You know, it's one of those times in AA when I was in the grapevine, and I don't mean I'm meeting in print. Where I was breaking up with my boyfriend, and he was cheating on me, and he was cheating on me with somebody in AA, and you know, and then like everybody knew about it, and you know, it was just like one of those ugly times. And here I am, 8 years sober, just found out that, you know, I have a 1-month-old baby, and I just found out that my boyfriend has been sleeping around, and I'm 8 years sober, throwing his belongings out of a second story window in postpartum, and then, this is sobriety, this is good. You know, another little window into the insanity that is my alcoholism. I will say too, out of the chronology of my story, that there was nothing so wonderful as sitting down with this man and writing him a check for all the items that broke on their defense. I cleaned that up, I made my amends, and got to walk away from that situation clean. But I also got to walk away from that situation with my what I like to call my alcoholic. I have a 7-year-old son named Jack who I, saved one of those streets out there because, man, he is showing the signs. And, you know, that's another thing that I've been going through lately is, you know, watching my son develop the same sorts of feelings, like exhibiting the same sorts of feelings that I had when I was a kid. And it breaks my heart to watch him. And luckily, the program with Al-Anon is really strong where I live. And so I believe in the singleness of purpose of our program enough that I won't share about that, but I also believe in the healing power of Al-Anon. I just want to say that. So I'm single. I have this baby. How the heck did this happen to me? And I'm hanging out in San Francisco, and I'm still involved in conferences, and I'm still doing service, and I'm still staying sober. And this place that me and God went to was a really, really pretty profound place. It got really, really dark before the dawn. I mean, it was like leap of faith for me. I had just started going, I had sent in my application to Berkeley. I was ready to go back to school. I had no idea how I was going to be paying my rent. I had no idea how I was going to do childcare. I had no idea how to be a parent, let alone a single parent. And you know what? I hung out in AA, and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me and helped me parent my child, helped me take care of myself, and like loved me through these dark, horrible times of grief that we have in sobriety. And you know, like I got sober, and life continued to happen. And this is one of those life things that just continued to happen for me. And I survived. And you know. And I have a 7-year-old. The last time I spoke out in California was in San Ramon about 6 months ago, and I was 2 weeks shy of my due date for my second baby. I didn't plan this one either. Like, I just become pregnant. It's totally bizarre. But I did fall in love again with another AA boy. AA boys are so good. But I married this one. I mentioned I left him at home. He's at home now with my 6-month-old baby. And this is my first time away. So it's nice to be away. And I am desperately looking forward to a full night's sleep tonight. I haven't had one in quite a long time. By the way, it is like 11 o'clock on my time. So so it's late. So it's bordering on, keep waking me up in the middle of the night time. But anyway, I have learned how to be a parent from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to be a wife from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to be a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to be an employee in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to be a student here. I mean, I went back to school. I completed my undergraduate degree, and now I'm in a master's program. I'm a high school dropout, and I lived in the gutter. And I'm getting a master's degree right now. And that might not mean a whole lot to people out there, but it means a whole heck of a lot to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's not me. It's not anything that I've necessarily done other than showing up and suiting up and doing the next right thing. I remember going back to school and thinking, there's no way I can even figure out like where my class is, let alone, take a test or do homework. And people told me AA stuff. They said, get the book. Read the book, Show up early. Sit in the front. If you have a question, ask. Take it one day at a time. And so I did those things. And before long, I had a high school diploma. And then I had, I finished in community college. I couldn't go any further there. And then I'm like at Berkeley. And then I graduated from Berkeley, like me, high school dropout. Who would have guessed? So, I like to share those things. Some of the other successes I've had, I want to talk about my family just for a minute. My parents who signed me over to the state, my parents who changed the locks on the house because they didn't want me to come home, they didn't want me in their house anymore because I was too much of the tornado just ripping through their lives. And every time that I stopped drinking, it was like, ain't it grand, the wind stops blowing, can I just come home and can everything be normal again? And when I got sober this time around, and I was really willing to work these steps in the way that they're meant to be worked for real alcoholics like me, I came to a new level of willingness with my family. And that level of willingness didn't mean that I was going to go home and once again say, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry. No, really, really, I'm sorry, I mean it this time too, you know. I had said I'm sorry so many times they were the two most empty words in my vocabulary. What I had to do was go home and be a different person. I had to be Alcoholics Anonymous in my house. And so the things that I was learning how to do at school, I started to do at home. There was no book that I could read to figure out how to get it done like there is in AA and like there is in school. But, you know, I had the good fortune of befriending some women who were older, quite a bit older than me, and I'm sad to say they're like my age now. So thinking about them as older women kind of freaks me out a little bit because I've become those women who they took me under their wings and like brought me into their homes, and we talked about sobriety while they were like cooking dinner for their families at night. And you know, I learned how to get sober like in the kitchens of awesome AA women. And they taught me how to be a family member by letting me be around their families. I mean, they all had young children, and I started to like not scare them so much anymore. And they were so afraid around me, and I started to learn how to, like, you know, just be, not have to have the center of attention focused solely on me all the time. And I started to bring that home to my own family. I would go home, and I would be the dishes without being asked. And, you know, that is no miracle outside, but that is, my friends, an AA miracle. Doing the dishes without being asked for a young alcoholic like me was big time. And I started to ask my parents how they were doing and what was going on with them. And I stopped asking for things like money. And I stopped asking for things like special consideration. And I stopped asking for special attention. And I just tried to be one among many. I tried to be a family member among family members. And my family has been rebuilt, essentially. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do. I mean, there's always work to do because I am still an alcoholic. I've been sober almost half my life, and I still have the ism. I still have a problem with self-centered thinking. I still have a problem with fear. I still have a desire to be special and unique and different and have you all love me in a very special way, but only God can. And so, you know, I need to work. I am a work in progress, definitely. There is no arrival. There is no being done with this work for me. But the work that I've done in my family I have seen measurable, considerable, beautiful results from it. And, you know, the amends that I make to my parents are today inviting them into my life in a way that they never thought they would be in my life. My mother has shared with me that she thought she was going to have to bury me. I mean, she still has tears in her eyes when she says, when I signed you over to the state, I had to do it with a full knowledge that I may never see you again alive. And she was willing to do that because she loved her family and she loved me. And that was the way she wanted to, that was the only way she knew how to show her love. And so what I do now that I have a productive, I have, it is essentially normal looking from the outside, a normal looking life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, I invite my family to participate in that. So my amends become things like asking my parents to come and participate with their grandchildren, asking them to come for the birth of my son. I will never forget asking my dad to walk me down the aisle and give me away at my wedding, you know. And it was a good joke. Too bad to give me away again. And at my wedding day, there was much chaos and confusion in the bridal room, and there were a lot of people there, and we were all getting all prettied up, and suddenly the show was about to start, and everybody left, and me and my dad were standing there, just the two of us, and he took my arm and he looked down at me, and he said, I had never been so proud of you. And my dad had never been proud of me. My dad had never said those words to me. My dad was not proud of me. My dad was proud of the Alcoholics Anonymous in me. But you know what? I showed up to AA, and I continued to do the work in AA, and those are the rewards I get from being in AA, is to feel a closeness and a connection, and I get to be in a relationship with my family today. My sister, who was 4 years younger than me, was devastated by my alcoholism, but I never knew it. She was the last child. She Jesus ran and hid when all the chaos was going on. You know, when we were having violent fights and, you know, I mean, she just like went up to a room and hid. And I never knew that she was hurt by that. I mean, you know, she just wasn't around. And I've always, you know, always hated her because she was like perfect and fine. And, you know, I was like this horrible, hideous monster. And, you know, I'm like, at 10 years sober, my sister calls me up on the phone one day to tell me that she's been in therapy for years because of me. She said, most people go to therapy because of their mothers, but I have you. And I'm going along thinking, I'm sober and everything's great. And, you know, my sister's in agonizing pain. Now, you know, I don't want to take responsibility for 10 years of her suffering, but I certainly have amends to make, you know, amends that I didn't realize I had to make. And so what I've been doing most recently is every single week I call my sister for no other reason than to say, hi, how are you? I love you. I'm thinking about you. And to ask her how she's doing in her life. And she has stopped answering the phone like, really? What are you calling me for? You know, she started to say, well, hi, how's it going? You know, and I didn't know that needed to happen. And that's why I stay here, and that's why I love this program, because I never know when that moment's going to come where God shows me where I need to go deeper and where I need to learn more and where there is more work to be done. You know, I mean, I said I right now I live in Iowa City. I moved away from Northern California, horribly sad to leave, had like the best going away party ever where everybody would get once again told me how special I was. God, I loved it. I showed up to Iowa and nobody cared how many people I had sponsored and nobody cared how many speaker meetings I spoke at and nobody cared like, you know, how special I was. And it was really hard again, you know, to like have these people not know what a gem they had amongst them. But I have learned to not run around going, me, 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 okay, please read my AA resume, accept me right away, know how good I am. You know, instead, I showed up in this AA community of these wonderful islands, and I, like, went to their meetings and did their thing, and didn't try to change their meetings. Well, you know, I did have to start one, because there was a little hole in this program, but... But it's a very well-attended meeting now, and I don't go to it because I care too much about it, if you know what I mean. But I do have a wonderful home group. My home group is the Midwest Group, and we meet on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock at Zion Lutheran Church in Iowa City, Iowa. If you're ever in town, please, please come by. We have one of two speaker meetings in all of Iowa City, and we have grown and blossomed as a group. It's an amazingly wonderful group. When I first started going, there were like 5 people attending this meeting, and now there are like, you know, up to 30, 35 people, which California standards is small, but Iowa standards is massive. But one of the things I just want to share about my home group is last week I had the opportunity to, there's an Al-Anon meeting that meets kitty corner to us at the same time. We had nothing to do with each other. We're just similar in location and identical in time. And a few of us got together and decided that we wanted to co-host some events. And so we started to have, we formed this sort of activity thing called the Family Afterwards. And we had over the summer a picnic where we had an Al-Anon speaker and AA speaker. We had a joint meeting and like a picnic, and you know, people played softball and basketball, and it was really successful and really fun. So much so that people said, why don't we do something like that again? And so last weekend we hosted Winter Games, where the Al-Anon people play games with the adults, and the adults people play games with the Al-Anons. And it was wonderful. We had another potluck. We had a joint speaker meeting where we had a member of Al-Anon speak for half an hour and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous speak for half an hour. And then we played cards and board games. And the people in my town came out. And I saw fellowship and camaraderie there that I don't often see. It was a conference kind of a feeling where people were excited that there was something going on and there was a story to hear. And there aren't very, like I said, my meeting is one of two speaker meetings in the whole town. And most meetings, people just, we read a little section out of our Joe Suzette or Daily Reflections and then go around the room and talk. And I so crave hearing people's stories, because that's what I fell in love with. So I came to AA and I heard how you felt and what you did and how you got sober and how you stay sober and what your life is like today. That's what I wanted to be around. I wanted to hear more of that. And, you know, and so that's what we try to do in my home group, my little Midwest group. We're just telling it like it is and telling our stories. And people are starting to tell their, I mean, there are people in my town who have been sober like 30 years who have told their story like once, you know? And there's something wrong with that. This is being taped, isn't it? All right. Hey, get all the copies of this tape before I go home. But it is wonderful to watch people in my town, watch their wealth of experience, their wealth of sobriety, and get to hear their stories, and get to hear how they got sober and how they stay sober. Because that is what Alcoholics Anonymous is for me. It's one alcoholic talking to another. I mean, I can stand up here and like spew off my story, and I could go on and on, and I won't, I promise. But, you know, what I love best is after the meeting when people come up and talk to me and just tell me something about themselves. And it never fails. People come up and say, I heard this, whether I said it or not. People hear what they hear. And, you know, and they come up and tell me, like, what they related to, and I get the chance to talk to another alcoholic. And that's what I love about doing this. That's what I love about AA. I walked around for years and years and years feeling desperately alone. I, before I picked up a drink, used to not go to class. I would walk down the hall in school and have just a sheer panic attack at the thought of being with other people, and I would go into the bathroom, lock the stall, and put my feet up and skip school in like elementary school so that I didn't have to be around other people. Today, I have relationships with people beyond my wildest dreams. I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a member of AA, I'm a darn good friend, I'm a sponsor, I'm a sponsee, and I am just one of God's kids, and I'm so, so grateful that I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous early on, so that when all those doubts and trials came, when all those moments of like, well, you know, maybe I was just young, maybe it was a phase, maybe blah, 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 you know, when the ticker tape starts going in my head, that, you know I'm an alcoholic because the solution works a little bit too good for me to be not to be an alcoholic, if you know what I mean. So I am really looking forward to a big conference here at the Spring Fling, and I want to thank you for inviting me here, and I think I'm going to sit down. Thank you.